The crisis in Ukraine escalates continually, it seems. Overnight, President Volodymyr Zelensky travelled to Munich to address a European security conference and called for immediate sanctions against Russia as fears of a full-scale invasion escalate again. For the latest from Ukraine, we're joined now by Australian photojournalist and documentary filmmaker Bryce Wilson. Bryce has been covering Ukraine since 2015, including by being embedded with special forces during combat deployments. He joins us now from the Ukraine-controlled town of Kramatorsk in Donetsk. Donetsk and Luhansk are the two pro-Russian separatist entities in the Donbass region of eastern Ukraine, where it's about 10 p.m. in the evening now. Bryce, thanks very much for speaking with us on Sunday Extra.
Sure, I appreciate the opportunity, and I just want to say your pronunciation of the town and also the region and just your summary of that was completely spot on, so I appreciate that you've obviously taken the time to read into this a bit.
What are the chances? Bryce, could you describe us what you've seen, where you've been today, and the general mood on the ground in eastern Ukraine there?
Yeah, sure. I mean, I can definitely chat about today, but I think I'd just like to maybe catch people up on the last couple of days.
So please do, yeah.
There's been a significant escalation in the conflict here. There is a currently implemented ceasefire, which is almost a somewhat ironic term given that the war has continued every day for 7 years at this point. Over the last 2 days, the ceasefire violations have increased exponentially to the point now where at last read, there was something like 1,500 ceasefire violations today alone. Previously, you know, there might have been three or four. The combat was in a bit of a lull. So the last 2 days has been an exponential increase. Today, I was working along the front line, as I have for the last couple of days, interviewing civilians. I attended a hospital to see how they were preparing. And, you know, long story short, they're not prepared. They are critically understaffed. They told me that they don't have enough medical equipment. They don't have enough medical supplies. The average age of a doctor or a surgeon there was something like 74 years old. The hospital infrastructure here, if the war was to start tomorrow, it would buckle. They would not be able to handle the massive influx of civilian and military patients. So in that region too, we were interviewing civilians in some parts of the contact line where people still live. There was one town where there used to be 2,000 people. Now a couple of hundred remain, and the majority of those aren't able to leave. The sounds of shelling were consistent throughout the day. People are scared, if I can be honest with you. People are afraid. I think one person I interviewed actually put it really well too. In the Donbass, the war has been going on for 8 years, and he told me that they feel forgotten about. They feel like ghosts. They feel almost rejected, I think is the best way to describe it.
Obviously, a really, really concerning situation there with the shelling so close from what you've been saying. I heard you use the expression there, the contact line. We've heard a lot in the international media the reference to the front lines. Can you describe exactly what the front line or the contact line is at the moment?
Sure. So in the east of Ukraine, there are the two currently occupied territories, which you mentioned. One is Luhansk and the other one is Donetsk. Now, to relate that to people at home, they're basically states. It would be like Victoria and New South Wales. Not in size. I'm not trying to one-to-one compare them, but an oblast is a state, essentially. The contact line, or the front line, runs from the northern part of Ukraine's eastern border all the way to the south of the country. It's something like, I think, 400 kilometers long. It's a maze of trenches, heavily mined, landmined environment. There are armored vehicles in multiple tiers extending into Ukrainian territory. I imagine it would be the same in the occupied territories too. The front line is essentially World War I-esque. Snipers, artillery, mortars, commercial drones are being used now to drop grenades on top of people. When I've been there, you have a false sense of security in the trenches. But what you don't realize is at any given moment, a drone might drop a grenade on you, a mortar might fly through the air and land on top of you. Some soldiers that I was embedded with, their lives were quite literally saved because a rocket that was launched at them lodged into a tree. It didn't hit the trench wall. It hit a tree and got stuck there and didn't detonate. So the front line's incredibly dangerous. And in many parts, civilians still live in towns that, in some places, the front line literally runs along the edge of the town. Abandoned houses have become military positions. The contact line and front line, I think they're used interchangeably. The contact line, I think, is considered a politically objective term to use. And then in between the two front lines as well of the Ukrainian, the government side and the, I guess, Russia's local forces sides or the so-called People's Republics, there are actually some towns that are in the middle, in the no man's land. Mm. And that zone is referred to as the grey zone.
Thanks very much for clarifying all that, Bryce Wilson. We've also heard international reports of members of the Wagner Group, known as Russian and Serbian mercenaries, being observed on the ground in those regions. Who are the people participating in this shelling that you've described?
So, yes, I've heard the same thing, that the Wagner Group has arrived here, and their name, you know, they call themselves, the nickname is the Musicians, after the composer. And Wagner, it's like this, essentially a group that allows Russia to conduct military operations in places where they're not necessarily meant to be. Famously, or well, maybe infamously, actually, the Wagner Group in Syria, I believe it was, there was an incident where the United States military killed something like 200 of their soldiers in a battle where Russia said, our soldiers aren't there. The Americans said, okay, well, who are these people? They said, it's not us. And then there was a heavy artillery. So the people, in my experience, and based on reporting I did a couple of days ago, to a kindergarten was struck by an artillery piece. Based on my observations, I feel confident to say that the attack was launched from currently occupied territories around Luhansk. I heard shelling. Today we had to evacuate, I want to say, a civilian area because heavy artillery, I could tell that it was being zeroed in close to where we were. And it was, you know, I didn't feel like we were in immediate danger, like there weren't shells 5 meters from us, but it was getting close enough that the civilians themselves said, this is very bad, you should leave, and we took their advice. So it's hard to say if the, you know, the fighting is one-sided, but in my experience of working here, the so-called People's Republics definitely, in my experience and in my opinion, engaged in provocative actions quite consistently, and I've observed the Ukrainian armed forces honestly showing a lot of resolve and patience, because at the moment I think they understand that potentially the Russia's local forces in the Donbass are trying to find some sort of casus belli or a reason to initiate the conflict at a high level. And historically too, when that has happened, that is when Russia's military has gotten involved, and that is what happened here historically too.
Speaking of evacuations, the leaders of those separatist entities have ordered the mobilisation of men between 18 and 55 years old, but also evacuated others to Russia. Are similar evacuations happening on the Ukrainian side?
No, and it's interesting you mention that, because when I was interviewing someone today, they were actually talking about it, and they said to me, I speak Russian, so when I go there, I speak with these people directly, and they were saying to me, they didn't know if it was true or not. They thought maybe it was a propaganda thing, but forced evacuations are underway in the People's Republics, and I'm not sure how many people have taken that up, but the leaders of the occupied territories are forcefully evacuating people to Rostov-na-Don, which is an area inside Russia's recognized borders, just directly across the border from where the occupied territories are. So I've not heard of any mandated or compulsory evacuations within government-controlled territories, but I do know that some people are voluntarily choosing to leave. Now, the flip side to that is, in some places, people can't afford to leave. They live in the war zone, not because it's their idea of a dream life, but because they don't have the means to go, or maybe they're in later years in life and they've lived their whole lives in these places. And you know, in a sad way, I've seen stubbornness here far greater than I have anywhere else. And some of these people say, I'll just die here before I leave. I don't want to go. This is my home. Why should I don't want this war. We want peace. Why should I have to go? So I guess to answer your question and to summarize that, I've not observed forced evacuations or anything like that in government-controlled areas, but there are some minor level of evacuations undertaken voluntarily, and I do know many people are moving further west in Ukraine. My friend at the moment is considering leaving Kramatorsk as well. He's quite scared.
Bryce Wilson, thank you so much for joining us on Sunday Extra this morning.
I appreciate the opportunity, and take care.
And stay safe. That's Australian journalist Bryce Wilson, who's been covering Ukraine since 2015 and spoke to us just now from the Ukraine-controlled town of Kramatorsk in Donetsk.